episode 2 of In Conversation, a podcast where we dive into potent, relevant, and sometimes highly political issues or topics that affect our Khan College community. My name is Anna Ostrovsky. I use she and they pronouns. I'm one of the co-coordinators of the Dialogue Project.
I am Camila Adriansen. I use she, her pronouns. I am also one of the co-coordinators for the Dialogue Project at Khan.
So this podcast is brought to you by the Gun Dialogue Project within the Connecticut College Division of Institutional Equity and Inclusion.
So today we want to talk about social justice education in higher ed and how we experience it as students at Khan and as part of other members on our community, such as some faculty and staff members. We want to talk about and dig on the backlash, comments, and feelings that students and staff and faculty of our community have received and perceived this initiative of Khan as, and also what are some needs that our community has to actually do this work in a way that can serve us better for liberation. And we just wanted to add a reminder that the goal for this podcast was to have a small virtual conversation with some members of our community and offer a space to hear what are the needs of our students, faculty, and staff, and allies doing the work. But also that this conversation is not the solution to the work and issues around social justice work at Khan. It's just one part of the work that we want to offer in this space. And yeah, let's dive into the questions.
So we're really asking questions in this episode like, what is social justice education? How does it work? And how do we as students experience or receive large-scale social justice efforts or actions made by the college? And then what do we need interpersonally, collectively, or institutionally to do the work of social justice here at Connecticut College? So let's dive into our episode. Can we talk about social justice education in higher ed? We hope you come away from this episode ready to dialogue and reflect on what you need to do social justice.
All right, so our first question is, in general, what is social justice education?
Hi, I'm Professor Manali Sheff. I go by she, her, hers pronouns. I'm faculty in the education department. My scholarship focuses on understanding and addressing educational inequities for students of color by examining relationships between power, knowledge, and educational policies and practices using critical race theory and women of color feminisms. Specifically, my teaching and research interests include critical science education, teaching and learning for social change, and culturally relevant and politically relevant curriculum development.
I'll start us off with just like a nugget. Social justice education to me is how we are supporting communities, learners, ourselves to understand how structural and institutional, interpersonal inequities exist in terms of different issues, and how we can support ourselves collectively to work for equity and justice across issues. There's five areas that I try to focus on in terms of there's content learning around an issue, right? You have to understand the facts and the historical context around issues and be able to understand how macro level issues play out in micro level instances and vice versa. Developing tools for critical analysis. So how do systems of oppression operate? How are these inequalities maintained, created, perpetuated? Who benefits from them? Tools for action and social change. So for me, my lever of change is education and teaching and learning and curriculum, but there are different forms of action. And so how are we developing those tools to actually make change and participate in personal transformation as well as larger social transformation? And then critical reflection, like we are not just floating around in the world. We have social locations. We have histories. So how are we supporting personal and collective reflection about how we show up and how, like, does what we say we value align with what we're doing in the world. And then, of course, awareness and transformation of like group dynamics. You know, so how are we in relation to the group? What's happening in a group? And really developing the skills, the ongoing work to grow in all of those areas is how I understand social justice education.
Hi, my name is Maurice Tyner. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I am the director of race and ethnicity programs at Connecticut College.
I think that definition was extremely expansive and really did the job. But if I could add another nugget, it to me, it has so much to do with unlearning, right? For me, social justice education really speaks to us understanding injustice, right? Being able to conceptualize what is actually forms of oppression against marginalized folks, right? And as we continue to grow and learn and expand, a lot of that has to do with unlearning the ways we've been socialized to think about each other, our identities, and how those identities are in relationships to systems and structures, right? We've been normalized. We've been socialized in a certain way. So much of social justice education outside of, you know, those five key facts that were offered, I would also just plainly add that it has to do with unlearning. So much that we've been taught is true. And getting those facts, right? Historical contexts, right? Social locations, so that we can truly wrestle with those facts in relationship to what we consider to be truth in our society.
What are the benefits and shortcomings associated with this kind of large-scale education at a small college such as ours?
Hello, this is Ariella Rotrammel. I use they, them pronouns. I am an assistant professor of gender, sexuality, and intersectionality studies at Connecticut College. My research interests include social movements, labor rights, and queer studies. For me at Connecticut College, I think one of the challenges of doing social justice education is really diving into the human dimension of this and what does it mean for us maybe as teachers in terms of pedagogy? What does it mean for students as learners? Because there are a lot of challenges, right? I think there's a challenge that when you're doing social justice education, we are seeking to undo power dynamics, right? In my field, there are a lot of hard conversations that you have to have around wanting a safe space, right? We've had that language for a long time. Then we started talking about brave spaces. And it's a real issue, right? About sort of we're all messy humans. And what does it mean when we try to come into a learning space together and that we can't actually promise a safe space, right? That there's risk that's involved and that's real. So I think there's a lot of questions, but there's also really great practices around pedagogy. And I appreciate I think that Manali and Maurice really know about what it means to do that work. I think with the Connecticut College context, you know, I've also seen that we sometimes, both teachers and students alike, we forget that this kind of work, in my mind, requires humility and that it's humility in relationship to others and sort of respect for other folks, but also humility in terms of how we understand ourselves and recognizing those contradictions or limitations, why reflection matters, and trying to be kind as we do this work. I think sometimes we forget that social justice work can't be authentic if we are mistreating others in that the name of social justice, right? That is a deeply flawed approach.
For me, some of the challenges I've seen is that, especially also in this time of, I think, like social media, like I didn't go through undergrad in time of social media, and it's very different. And there is a lot more information out there, which is wonderful, right? Young people are hungering and thirsting, especially young people of color are looking for information about themselves, about their histories, about their experiences. I remember like even me like doing searches of like Asian American, racism, like, am I the only person who's experiencing this in the world, right? And just looking for information. And so I think that there's possibilities for large scale social justice education in terms of like we're making, there's information available, right? There's curriculum available that didn't used to be available, really. So there's possibilities. And then some of the challenges that I have noticed, especially at a predominantly white institution, at a liberal arts institution, I get the sense sometimes that we have moved towards performative engagement rather than dealing with some of those like really hard questions that Ari is talking about, right? So in my courses, when I have a majority white student population, and then there are some students of color, there are multiply marginalized students in that class, they're in that class for a different reason, right? They're in that class for survival, for need, for like being able to like see themselves and see themselves as agents of change in the world instead of the world just acting upon us. And then there are white students who are at different places, right? And white cishet students who are at different places who are trying to learn, right? And who are like, I also have these experiences. I've seen these experiences. I want to be in solidarity with. So what can I do? So there's the contradictions of how do we make a social justice course, a teaching and learning for social change course, a critical race theory and education course? How do we make it useful for the people who need it and useful for the people who are trying to learn how to be in solidarity and coalition? That's the challenge that some of the research that I do specifically, like how am I supporting, what would it look like to center women, non-binary people of color, like in their full, like particularities of experiences in learning spaces, even when that's not the case? And can everybody learn from that if we do that? So these are the challenges, and those challenges lead to possibilities.
If we're talking about the kinds of diversity trainings that we've been doing on campus this year, I think it's good to sort of say, like, here's a baseline. Like a baseline, I think we were just talking about, a baseline of being a human in this community, right? There are certain kinds of expectations, both in terms of how we talk to each other and also how we take responsibility for ourselves and each other. I love it in that sense. And I also think that that's completely, you know, it's a threshold. It's not, I don't think we can pretend that that's about getting people to some like level of wokeness. To me, I think that it really is a matter of perspective. We're from the olden days. I'm from the olden days. For me, I'm someone who knows what it's like to have an absence, right? And an absence of conversation about these issues, and definitely an absence of taking responsibility for these issues.
So I think we need that reminder sometimes of yeah, there was a time when there was nothing, when nobody talked about it, anything. And so I appreciate the trainings in terms of there are policies in place, right? Like we must change, we must fight for changes in policy and practice and changes in ideology, right? It's a multi-pronged approach. I think that trying to bring about transformation, personal, community, and like broad scale social takes a multi-pronged approach. I think we run into issues when it becomes about compliance and not about ongoing work. You know, it's the beginning, right? It's the exposure argument and know what the policies are, right? And if it can even provoke people to say, oh, that's the policy, that's not enough. We actually need more policies, right? We need policies to actually change the culture. And those one-off trainings cannot take the place of long sustained engagement. And so we need all of it, right? We need multi-pronged approaches.
We asked a group of student leaders from across different affinity groups and student organizations on campus to come together in an intergroup conversation.
We then asked people to reflect on what they need specifically in order to do this social justice work sustainably, what they need from both their peers, colleagues, as well as the institution.
For me, this is Ricardo speaking. I personally am very tired, especially this year, with everything that happened with the Black Lives Matter movement in the summer of 2020 and seeing everyone post on social media, reposting, posting on their own pages. I was expecting a lot of people to come and really use that energy that they said they had. So when I came here, especially with my role as the chair of equity and inclusion, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to have so many people ready to help and like reach out to me and do whatever I can. And at this point, it's like I'm pulling tooth and nail to like get people to like really get involved. And it's really frustrating because it always ends up being the BIPOC students who are doing stuff. And they're the ones who are doing all this activism, but it relies so heavily on white students as well, because at the end of the day, we live in a country that's built on white supremacy. So at the end of the day, they have the power. So it's so vital that white students become engaged with activism work and work surrounding diversity, equity, inclusion, but none of that is happening. So all of that energy that they said they were doing and then how this year turned out was not the same thing.
Hi, Kairis. Maybe it's also because I'm a senior. So I've felt like, okay, well, we're doing this again. And another year, you know, another disappointment with it. And like, and I think it goes a lot with like, I talked to other folks about this, about having white peers claim that they're for you, and yet they're still hanging out with their racist, problematic white friends. And so I think for me, it's a very like, I'm tired of people being so fake and being so fake of like, oh, you know, well, I'm for you and I'm for your cause and I'm like pro-immigration and I'm for Indigenous rights and all this other stuff and like Black Lives Matter. So it's like, oh, I'm tired of that fakeness. And I think it's hard because I'm tired that I have to bring it up because it's like, you should know. How dare you think I'm that dumb, you know, to like not have those barriers.
That definitely speaks to the aspects of like performative activism that we see here on campus with like social justice education, not just on race, but gender, sexuality, like all these different aspects of intersectionality that just are like, I'll do a little Instagram show and then I'll never touch on it again.
This is Natalie, and when I think of con community, I really think of the people that look like me. It's the BIPOC students that really show up in these certain kinds of spaces. And then it's really interesting when you look at like PICA or CISLA when they're very white dominated. And I think that says a lot. I think it's very easy to do that compared to actually do the work.
Let me keep it real. The fact that it was hard to get white people to just even be in this podcast right now, which says a lot. The fact that Elevate, the social justice conference at Con, a lot of white people, a lot of white students found it really hard to, you know, just participate in a virtual conference says a lot. Or the fact that people are like, I can't go to Emoja, you know, it's not for me. And it's like, Emoja be having events, Emoja be having conversations, or La Voz, or Mecha, you know, all these other things that white people or just people who are not of that identity don't want to do that uncomfortable work says a lot. And so I think people who are saying like, oh, okay, well, these spaces are available, but they're not available for me to get educated or for me to engage because they know it's extra work, you know? And I know they're going to be uncomfortable. So it's just kind of like, and it's shown, like it's shown by like all the projects and participations and then looking at a room and being like, oh, it's just us again. It's just us, you know, and we're going to keep having the same conversations and it's just going to keep in the same room and it's not going to go anywhere, you know, because people are too scared of us.
There were more people at Wednesday's announcement about the gifts than there have ever been at programming like Elevate or have ever even shown up to our programming.
This is Daniel speaking. I think that measure just kind of speaks to the gravity of how con students don't take like the initiative to explore these ideas. We really only see students coming out to events like Eclipse because they want to hear the most modern music being danced to on stage as a performance. And that shows allyship as a performance because they only go to that one event.
Through both of our conversations, it started to become very clear that there is a lot of frustration and overwhelm around the downfalls that we have been experiencing in these forms of social justice education. There's a lot of pain and frustration in not seeing your community show up and saying one thing but not engaging in another. And so we really want to acknowledge that lived experience and how that can combine with the difficulties and challenges that we see at Con in the academic arena as well. In hearing what the reality is of social justice education at Con, we then asked people to reflect on what they need specifically in order to do this social justice work sustainably, what they need from both their peers, colleagues, as well as the institution.
To put it into my own personal context, I think liberatory social justice education really for me looks like being in academic classrooms and spaces where historical truths are being told, and right, and we are really wrestling with the historical context of people and their identities, right? I think about me in particular. I graduated from Con with the Africana Studies degree, right? I've been a Black man my entire life, right? But I understood the context of my Blackness in a very different way prior to having an educational context that taught me the truth about my history and how, you know, how I got here, how my ancestors got here. Right. And how we've been conditioned to think about ourselves and each other through institutions. And for me, that really opened my eyes up to understand what I considered to just be every day was not just by happenstance. Right. There are systems and powers put in place that people are working, right, to make sure that Black and brown folks are continuously staying oppressed and continuously find themselves to have to overcome these systems and structures. This is not by happenstance, right? So for me to obtain the truth, right, about my history and its context within an academic setting, I then can take that information and begin to do what's necessary in the larger context of my life, in the communities that I operate in, to continue to educate and dismantle thoughts and ideologies about things that are just not true, right?
I think of social justice knowledge as history because of the past. I think of all of like the history of Con with the protests they had to do and basically like occupying Fanning where the administration is to have Black voices be heard way back in the day. And I think that sort of cultural responsiveness and also cultural responsibility that as a student body that is at an educational institution, like it's just essential. And if not mandatory, then I don't know what is. It should be something that's more of a traditional aspect of education, I think, in my perspective. But obviously we still struggle with American history in public schools. So it's a lot to ask for. I guess in our context as a Connecticut College campus, it could be liberating for our communities because social justice, like pedagogy being instructed to us or at least brought to a dialogue or a discourse can lead to further discussion as well as theorizing and using actual like critical race theory and applying it to our institutional, you know, framework, which is basically what we do on a daily basis to make our school better for not only us, but our future, you know, BIPOC camels will be here.
I'm really struck by what Bruce was talking about because that's similar to my experience as an undergrad and as a queer person, right? We don't get socialization. You know, my family, they're straight and I accept them for that. But it was in my gender studies classes that I started understanding what I was living, right? And how people were interacting with me in a way that I needed that language. I needed that history. And, you know, I don't think I often say this, but right, like my education saved my life. So I think it is a question of, you know, what do we mean when we talk about liberation and for whom? Because when we talk about it in the classroom, right, there's those possibilities, right? The students who come into these courses looking and desiring to know their history, to know themselves better. But also liberation for me is a very political word, and it, you know, consent, wanting to do this work, wanting to do this outside of the classroom, right? That's to me what liberation is about, right? It's about being free, because there's a way that I think if we want liberation, we fully choose it, and we choose it outside of course requirements. We choose it outside of credentialing, right? And maybe we learn some things in these classrooms, but what we do with it, to me, is where any kind of liberation could start.
Yes, I need collectivity. I need this work to be collective work and not this hyper-individualistic work. I feel like one of the cultural aspects of the current context that I find myself in is this hyper-individualism and really this idea of single access struggle. So I need in the core of my being critical intersectional praxis. Like I need critical intersectional coalition. I need, as an education faculty, I need students of color in my classes. I need multiply marginalized students in my classes. I don't want, like, again, to the core of my being, I need us to understand education as a broader project. You know, like everybody needs to understand like educational principles and how they're teaching and learning in whatever spaces they're in. As an Asian American who went into education and like people in my community and people in other communities had no clue what I was doing and who I was and what I was, I think I need just intersectional critical praxis. I need coalition. Like I need people who value and see the value like of this work and like themselves in the work. And I need the institution to see value in that labor. I will throw that out there. I need the institution. I need leadership. I need my colleagues to see the value of the labor of the people who are doing the bridging work. And they might not be out front, but they're here and they're doing it.
So I think one of like the really good ways that Khan can try and implement more of the social justice education is to interweave it more into just classrooms in general. So whether it's biology, whether it's gov, whether it's education, just like really find a way to put it in there. I think really finding a way to input it into just like a regular classroom setting. As a sociology major, when I was thinking about social justice education, I'm like, well, that's my major. But not everyone has that. I would even call it a privilege. So I would make sure that it's just interwoven into every single classroom that it can, because personally, I think that it's really possible, no matter the subject. It might take a little tweaking of a lesson plan, but like possibly finding a way to interweave it, I think would be really great. Because honestly, from what I've seen, not a lot of Khan students really take the opportunity to take a social justice education course, or when it came to the training for white students, it's like people didn't want to take it, but like for what? Like, what is your reason? So really taking that opportunity to put it in there and really show people that it is applicable, that it is important, and that it's in every single discipline.
I think very generally, we need a lot of money that to go into these programs to flesh them out. Like Camila said, the education department only has 2 faculty members, which is ridiculous, as well as a lot more representation. Like, it really does not hurt to hire more Black professors and not treat them like crap.
I think that mine is going to be very much like, I think we need to stop having the deans. I don't know if I'm using it right, but posse scholars as opposed to other scholars who are not necessarily on posse, because I feel like being a posse scholar, like I think I can see how like I've been told like this, you are the cream of the crop kind of dialogue. And it's very like harming because it kind of shows that like, I know it's trying to like amplify or like to actually celebrate them, but I think at the same time, it puts other students of color down. And I think it really shows that like, yeah, there's other students at Con who are also like first gen, who are also like BIPOC, you know, who are far away from home. And I think that there needs to be more of like, you can't just decide to who you're going to support. Like you either got to support everybody, you know what I mean? Like you, cause then that shows tension. And then it's like, that's disrespectful at the end of the day.
For me, I think it's important to get like, or hype up the Hollerin Center because not a lot of students know that you can engage outside of the community, and Con is such a bubble. And I feel like it's really important that students know like, hey, you can go out there, work at community gardens, work at homeless shelters. And
for me, I think, I know this is a big ask saying that we're on the East Coast in Connecticut at a PWI, but I really feel like I need one, more Indigenous scholars, more Indigenous professors as a, it's just as a light, as like a guiding light, as well as more scholars from Pacifica. I believe I'm one of the only Native Hawaiians on campus. And because of that, I've had this need to commodify myself and commodify my identity so my peers and maybe even some of my professors understand what it feels like to be coming from the middle of the Pacific Ocean, where race is seen as something that's more a movement than a solid, solid marker. So for me, I really just need more representation. It's a big ask, but it's just something that would be awesome.
It's very saddening to see that as a college that sits on Indigenous land, that they don't really respect and honor the land by holding sacred space for Indigenous students in admissions, as well as that goes with faculty members, staff members. So I guess to my call to action to the college is to really preach what they say. If they want to be an anti-racist institution and dismantle racist systemic issues, then they need to help the Indigenous communities find their place in higher ed.
So for me, I think the bare minimum that I would be asking from my peers would be just to acknowledge privilege and that they have privilege. Like I myself have privilege. Like there are, like depending on the situation, I absolutely am part of the majority group and I have privilege over other people, you know, despite my other identities. So I think just acknowledging that privilege is a thing and hopefully having the education to understand why or how they have privilege, I think it's really just like the bare minimum. Cause I think having that some sort of like academic understanding of how social justice and power structures work, I think is really beneficial in jumpstarting people's understanding and openness to learning more about these issues, because that's basically the first step, and seeing that there are real world consequences and like real world issues affecting people because of these power structures is really helpful. And hopefully that can be the first step in hopefully a long journey into learning social justice and what that means, because we're all learning here.
I think at the most basic level, I need white students to care. I think that's not something we see enough, or like, I don't know, there just isn't enough empathy or sympathy or whatever. I just need them to care that, you know, our brothers and sisters are dying. This shouldn't be something that has to be mandatory. I think it kind of hurts that it had to come to this, that your grade has to depend on it, and that it doesn't come from like your own kindness.
I think a big responsibility has been for students like from marginalized communities and marginalized identities to do the brunt work and like lift, carry everyone else up. And I think like I need my white cishet, like cisgender, heterosexual, like privileged students to really take up the charge. Ricardo and Nat were really touching on the ideas of like intersectionality and how our different identities give us power or privilege. And there's also like discrimination and oppression. And all those identities intersect and compound and like affect our daily lives differently. But knowing that because they are white, because they're cisgender, because they're heterosexual, or for some of the students, they have like compounding, increasing amounts of privilege that goes completely unchecked in their 4 years here, because maybe they're a STEM major, like, nope, my focus is bio, chem, math. Like, I don't got time for like social justice education. So like first starting off by putting those identities in check, realizing the privilege that they have, and then having them engage, having them actually care and take the time to listen and learn and educate themselves, because it is not up to us to always having to force information down their throats or having to, this is my life story, this is why it's sucky, this is what's wrong with it, can you help me fix it? It's not a sob story. I don't need your pity. I need you to care. I need you to listen. I need you to do something about it.
What do I need from my peers? Probably be understanding, kind of going off the privilege thing. Like, I think because we always repeat BIPOC, we kind of lump us into being students of color, but we don't recognize that not everyone has the same struggle. You know, there may be struggles pertaining to a certain affinity group or a certain identity, and we kind of don't want to act as if we understand it when we really don't. So I think trying to, you know, be an ally and just ask what is needed is well enough than trying to put yourself in that person's shoes. And just, I not to be too vague, but it's like, you know, like every identity group has their own individual issues, and just trying to understand it and see how you can help rather than try to worsen it by acting like if you're a part of it when you don't understand it, and you sometimes can't even formulate an idea of how that even feels. So I think just understanding is something I would need from my peers, as well as something I'd give to them.
And on that note, I guess like I think like definitely like a more attention to privilege, like Ricardo was saying, like about citizenship and ability to, because I feel like sometimes like we keep reproducing some like ableist narratives or very like US focused narratives, like unintentionally, and I understand it, but I feel like definitely asking for like everyone, like understanding that like the US is not the whole world, and also that our countries, because like coming from Latin America, I feel like there's also like huge ignorance that I have about like a big part of the world, you know? So like I feel like definitely asking that of my peers and from myself. And yeah, and like to take care of each other as much as we can.
I feel like a lot of the times it is on the affinity clubs to do the work. But I think we can't deny the fact that there is tension between affinity clubs. You know, I think we're very like, we can't be doing that because we know that there's a lot of like things we also have to like make in our own community. But I think we have to be more blunt or more transparent with our affinity clubs. So we can actually build these bridges, because I think like at the end of the day, the only people that are going to be gaining if we keep like keeping to ourselves is white supremacy. And that's what they want us to do. So like, I think we need to have a little bit more conversation and really bring it to ourselves to be like, hey, how can we be like best supporting each other rather than taking from each other?
Well, I think like what I feel like I would also need from my peers is, and I think especially thinking on like BIPOC students, low-income students, international students, queer students, and disabled students too, to rest and to not like overwork us. And I mean, I think like it's a double-edged sword, I guess, because like sometimes like we don't get to choose, you know, like when we have to work like 2 or 3 jobs on campus or whatever, like that's not a choice that we have. I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna keep one or not. But like, I feel like there's a lot of pressure from con in our peers, because we're all doing 1,000 things. That there's like that pressure of like, oh, we also have to be doing 1,000 things. And I feel like that is not like we don't have to. And because I feel like that it's exhausts us to a point that we don't have time to check in with each other and like actually see like, okay, what do we need? What do we want? Like, how can we make it? Like, at least I feel like that's the case in many cases. Like for being 1,000 things, we don't have time to like sometimes actually think on what we need and plan based on it. I remember we had the So What's Good meeting like last year. And I know because of the pandemic, it was triggered to follow up, but I understand too, like everyone is so burnt out that it's hard to get together when people are so freaking tired. So I think like that's what I would like ask for my peers, specifically for my communities.
I think the work is always going to be there. And I think the more we are able to do the work in intersectional coalition and really try to understand like the particularity of experiences and what that tells us about how the structures and institutions are operating, the more successful we're going to be. And there's always going to be backlash. And there are times when we need to step back and replenish and know that there's going to be other people stepping in. And that's okay too. So I think the benefits are there. And then I also think we need to move away from like performative and just jumping into action because the system is now all of a sudden demanding it. It's like it's demanding it every second, whether we see it or not, whether we in our experience see it or not.
I think we can look forward to is this work of social justice education being a community effort, right? It can't just be the job of the administration. It can't just be the job of the faculty. It can't be just the job of the staff, right? It has to really be ingrained in the Connecticut College fabric that this is who we are as a community, right? And this humility, right? So much of it has to come from there. If you're approaching this at all with this level of I got everything right, or I don't have to engage at all, right? Either or on either or sides of that spectrum, you're not aiding in the movement, right? So I think in whatever way that we can continue to ingrain this in the fabric, as it becomes ingrained into the fabric and the expectation is there, we begin to see the value of why those structures are put in place to dismantle those very real and present power dynamics that's ingrained in the Connecticut College fabric as well.
Have digged into the nitty-gritty, the good, the bad, the ugly of social justice education.
I think there's definitely many stuff that like to ask from the institution and from ourselves, like, and like our peers from our communities and from more privileged communities. I feel like as a student of color myself, like I really appreciated everything that the students of color in the interview have talked to about wanting more engagement from our white peers and like genuine engagement and caring like about the, you know, the things that they share on Instagram, the things that like many times it stays on the performative activism like stage to actually go deeper to it. Because I feel like that's why we need to actually get that collective effort and distribution of labor of who does the social justice work here at Conn.
Yeah, we really need that collectivism, really, like in order to do this work and reach our goals of like having a more just community and inclusive community, like it has to be a collective group effort. And in order to do that, we need to build coalition. Even our podcast was a microcosm example of this. Like, we did not get everyone in the room that we wanted to in that intergroup student conversation. And so what does that mean for building coalition? How can we just distribute that labor more equally in order to like continue to build that intersectional work and like action? Like what you're saying about the performative activism, I think that's the potential that has arisen from this like hyper virtual year that we've had. Yeah. Like being in a pandemic and like post summer 2020 of like hyper online activism. It's really highlighted who is in it and who is not. And there's definitely great interest in learning and having these conversations, but everyone's so burnt out. So it's like, it often just stops short at the like, yeah, I'm interested. And then it doesn't go anywhere from there. And so how do we like next year, like push back on that and like poke the institution that continues to have all this rhetoric and say like, we care about social justice. We're doing these big movements. And it's like, great, okay, you're starting to do these movements, but it needs to be more than that. And in order for it to be more than that, we need students to come together in coalition and have collective action. But we can't do that if we're not together.
Yep. And I feel like hoping like how next semester is going to go, how the dynamic is going to change that can maybe allow us to do more of this coalition work within the affinity groups and white students here at Con, because I think like there's a role that white students have to play Con that I don't know what it is because I'm not a white student here. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's part of the work too, and not always expecting like, you know, and like same with other privileged students here, like, you know, like straight students, like cis students. I feel like there's a lot, like even within our communities that I appreciated some students mentioned in the interview, like that even like students of color are calling, like we're not just a monolith of like, we all experience the same stuff mm-hmm. as students too. Because there's classism and xenophobia and gender and sexuality and like so many things that like also shape our experiences here. So I feel like I'm thinking on that collective effort and like intersection of practices that Professor Shev was talking about, we really need that like on the daily within our communities and within our own like racial, ethnic communities, and also within other communities here at Con and affinity groups and just like members of our community. And yeah, I guess like on that note, like multi-pronged approach that we need, and like that there are some things maybe like the part of like the institution or like the students are already doing, but we need that. And, you know, many of the things that students say, you know, like faculty, like more like prioritizing on where does the money go? So like mm-hmm. hiring faculty for which departments mm-hmm. or for which programs.
Yeah. And it speaks to what Maurice was talking about, right? With like that this social justice work needs to be ingrained into the fabric yep. of and the workings of how Connecticut College operates. Mm-hmm. And that means having a multi-pronged intersectional approach to the work. Like we need the policy. We need faculty on board. We need students doing the like on the ground grassroots activism. We need the interpersonal relations to improve, which mm-hmm. starts with talking to each other, like what we're doing with the dialogue project. Like we need all of these things in order to get to that point of collectivism and ultimate liberation. Hopefully we get there. That's yeah. the goal, right? Because there's potential. When you say that you have these values, which is what the performativeness and the rhetoric is, it's like saying a thing, but you're not actually acting yep. upon it. That's a start, at least. Like, you're acknowledging that you need to do something. But then, like, how do we move past that? And how do we do that as a collective in, yeah, in a more equitable way? You can only hope that the burnout will end eventually. Like, that are, like, there's always going to continue to be up things. I can't say that on podcast. There's going to continue to be like
messed up
things in a world that in the context that mm-hmm. we live in our quote-unquote democracy. So but how do we rejuvenate and have a like develop a true community of care so we can do the work? Mm-hmm. And that means like, again, that goes back to like building relationships and like across difference and being able to rely on each other in a way that I don't think we have right now. So, and that like you can get into a whole nother conversation about the nitty gritty of how exactly do you have collective like coalition. And I think that we really need to turn the mirror in on our Con community and figure that out if we're going to be able to do this work, because we are so fragmented.
Yeah. And I feel like kind of like on that note that there has been like progress, if it makes sense, like,
right?
Because
right.
like thinking of, it's been like I think like 50 years of defending takeovers,
mm-hmm.
And we had, you know, two takeovers, like I think like after a decade, and like, you know, the things that we have now, like the clubs or like spaces that like as students of color, as queer students and disabled students, like some of the little access that we get to have right now is because of the work of our ancestors before, mm-hmm. you know, that came here mm-hmm. to Con. So I feel like, I don't know, I guess like these just make me think of like, okay, like where do we go? Like where do they live? Like what, I feel like it's also useful to like learn from that, like mm-hmm. what worked and what didn't. To say like, okay, what can we actually do now
yeah.
to make it like more sustainable, not burning up the same five students that go to the same events
mm-hmm.
and like are always in those leadership positions. And yeah, how do we do it like sustainably and collectively, you know, working with students and faculty, but all towards that form of liberation work that we can get here.
Yeah, I want to say an amen to that. You've been listening to In Conversation, a podcast brought to you by the Gun Dialogue Project. Are you interested in learning more about the project or looking for some dialogue tips, tools, and tricks for how to have hard conversations? Find us on Instagram at con.dialogue.
We wanted to thank everyone who made this episode possible, including our peer facilitators and collaborators on this process of editing, making the interviews and social media work, Edgar Alvarez, Mira Narayanan Pandit, Caroline Karaki, and our social media coordinator, Melissa Viles Lopez. We also wanted to thank the students we got to interview, including Ricardo Lombera, Kairis Rivera, Nat Diaz-Troncoso, Daniel Varela, Melissa Lindsay, Anu Breeden, and Alex Rodriguez. And the faculty staff that also shared some time with us on this episode, Professor Manali Sheff, Professor Ari Rotramel, and Maurice Steiner.
We'd also like to thank our music mixer for this episode, Enzo Tran, and our wonderful pro staff and supervisors, Aaron Duran and Rachel Stewart, for helping us edit and really in the vision and support. This podcast would not be possible without you. We'd also like to give a thanks to Dean John McKnight for your ongoing support and leadership. We will miss you. And of course, a big thanks goes out to our benefactor, Agnes Gund. This project would not be possible without you. So thank you.